Let's take a call. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Morning. Hi.
Good morning.
Mr. David, I'm a first time caller, right?
Yeah.
And I am calling because it reached a stage now I cannot handle it anymore. I saw something in the papers today, Barbados today, where this little 11-year-old boy, right? He was more or less, he's been cyberbullying, that's for want of a better word, right? And I think it is about time that someone, somebody, the government, someone take this very serious. You know why I'm saying so? Because one, my daughter, she's a woman now, but she was a victim of this, okay, when she was going to school, at school. And two, I myself became, or I'm a victim also, okay? And we have been just sweeping this. Go ahead, sorry. We have been sweeping this under the carpet for too long, but it's going to get worse because we're becoming more computer savvy. And people are doing things, and they are not being made to pay for their act. And I'm speaking about big people, okay? What recourse do you have? My question is, Misuse Act, where do you go? Because it's very hard to have to pay an attorney or pay someone to fight a case for you. But there must be something that can be done because people are overdoing it now.
I want to say this. If you commit a criminal action under the Computer Misuse Act, you go to the police. I want to know how many people in this country have gone to the police and complained under that particular piece of legislation and what results they have gotten from doing so. I really wish that the police would produce the figures and let the people of Barbados see for themselves whether this particular piece of legislation is being taken seriously by them or not. Because I know of instances, where people and one person in particular in this country is being allowed to use the computer in whatever way he can to malign people in Barbados. Up to the other day, a man called me complaining about the same thing. The police are supposed to act. This is not supposed to be something that is left exclusively to civil action. You can take action against people for that, civilly. But under the Computer Misuse Act, it looks as though they pick and choose in this country who they can go after for the things that are happening.
But I
agree with you 100%.
It's sad. It is very sad, you understand, because it has happened to me, and all I have is my 2 pieces of evidence, or my 6 pieces of evidence, but when you go and they contact their friends in high places, nothing is done.
So you actually went to the police on the matter?
No, I did not. No, I have
but to. You need to do that.
I had my evidence, but I did not know what to do.
No, you need to make a complaint with the police. You need to give them a statement. And you need to let the people of Barbados know in due course whether you got any follow-up action from them. They lose your files as well.
I have them. So I am going to go that route. I have them. And I'm ready to expose because I am not backing down. Somebody need to take accountability of their actions. And this is not no layman. This is somebody in high places. This is somebody in high place. But I have my evidence. Somebody has got to say what happened because I'm not backing down.
Your first course of action is to go to the police and register your complaint and let us see what they do after that.
Okay.
Let us wait and see. Because what is happening here is ridiculous.
David, if I may add to the lady's statements and your input, I know of someone for sure who attempted to initiate a discussion and a contact with the police to register about one of these same issues. And the reaction and the reception from the police at the police station where they call you call the the authority. They say you have to make a police station near you. The reception was rude. It was indifferent. They didn't seem to know what you were talking about, and you were passed around. And it was not in a way that would encourage you to, like you said, think that people are taking it seriously and that you will want to participate in the process, in the democratic process of trying to get your perceived wrongs addressed. So I think even the police themselves need to educate their staff about it, let them know this actually exists in law.
One way or another, it's going to be known. It's going to be exposed somewhere or the other. It's going to be exposed because no one is going to silence me. Somebody has got to take accountability because it will get worse. It is getting worse. It is getting worse. And as I told you, it happened to my kid too, and she was affected. I had to move her from the school. I actually moved her from the school and had to put her in a private school. And then it turned around and happened to me in another form. No, I am going to expose big time. But as you say, I'm going to go to the police first. I'm going to make a note who I spoke with, the date, everything, and see what happens from there. Okay?
Okay. All right. Glengo.
Good morning. Come in, please. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello, this is Brad Sachs.
Yes, good morning again.
Yes.
I heard the lady talking about the cyberbullying, and I said, let me get on and make a comment, you know?
Yes, sir.
And a lot of these, you got to ask yourself, what apps are these people use for cyberbullying, right? And at what age should these young people be allowed to sign on to these things? Because there was a time when you had to be an adult. And young people use fictitious age to get on by these apps, right? So if you use these things and you go in an environment where there's bullying, you can't complain because you ain't hiring the right in there. Parents should be supervising the youngsters to make sure that they don't have phones with these things on them. The parents are responsible.
I get your point, sir, but I think you're missing a wider point. The wider point is the morality, the justification, the rightness of people bullying others. That is the real issue. Is it desirable? It is not desirable. And what can we do to stamp it out as quickly as possible? Because cell phones, et cetera, are so widespread that how can you police them by apps or whatnot? It really is an impossible task. It is the morality, it's the attitude, it's the value of people, whether they think it's all right to harass and bully others or not over things that are really of no concern to them. First, I understand that a lot of the bullying is coming from adults, not children. The attempt at bullying the youngster is coming, I understand a lot of it's coming from adults. I don't know if you have any further word on it, but that is my understanding. But
It's like kite flying. Most of the complaints that people have about the kites keeping noise at night, they're being flown by grown men.
Okay. You see? So we're saying, look, keep the young children in spaces that are age appropriate for them, right? And see what happens. Because the bullying was there even before you got the technological.
Look, I hear your line, you see? But let me tell you something. I believe that the Computer Misuse Act is to be used. And therefore, if there are people in Barbados, there can't be too many of them. If there are people who are using cell phones and the computers in a way to intimidate and harass other people in this country, it can be addressed if only the authorities who are vested with the power deal with it. We should never be in a situation where we are surrendering to that and saying, oh, well, the answer to it is make sure that your child does not become a victim by keeping them from it. Look, this is an era in which our children need to be exposed to a lot in the computer. You look, try to evade all that is bad, but in pursuit of that which is good, you will come across that which is bad from time to time. And as it relates to cyberbullying, because that's really what it is, at the end of the day, it can be stamped out. If the police do their thing, and if members of the public, especially when they are defamed, decide that there are a lot of people sit down here and take this stuff and say, oh, don't worry, the person ain't got no money and that sort of thing. No, you got to take a stand, all right? And that's what I believe.
Just let me give you some instance out of my experience, you know. They got people in the wider world who sit down on the computer every day and look for opportunities to scam people, scam businesses and stuff, right? And it's happened in Barbados. What part people have hacked emails and directed funds to their accounts in Eastern Europe where you can't get back your money. Good? These are things that happen. It's a rough, tough world out there.
But
can't see who is behind this thing, the computer on the other side. Good?
You can find out.
You need to take steps to protect.
You can find out.
Areas. You can find out.
This in Barbados, you can find out.
Yeah, I know they can find out in Barbados. I know this stuff is there in Barbados.
But
people need to take responsibility.
You hear this guy talking about taking responsibility and people... Look, you realize that Twitter's account get hacked and people were told to put up Bitcoin and they will get more than the Bitcoin that they put in.
Yeah.
And a number of people actually did it. It is how these things are done too, you know. You can tell me, when Barack Obama's Twitter account and the fella from Tesla account get hacked this week or last week or whenever it was. I mean... They didn't go there looking for trouble, but trouble came looking for them.
Correct. I tell you, David, I've seen this in Barbados too. I've seen in Barbados where people just change one letter of an email. Good? And managers in check, you know, because they're accustomed to this thing and it looks authentic, you know, and you go on and send money to the wrong bank account. I've seen
that. That's hacking.
There are two different issues. Hacking. It's not cyberbullying. And bullying is a different matter. Cyberbullying in Barbados has to be seen as immoral. It has to be something that is not compatible with our values. It has to be taught not to be done. Bullying, period. No matter what
there's a wider issue that I was really addressing. And it's really why you're using the technology. Okay? Now, coming out of the recent foray by the Ministry of Education into online teaching and stuff, right? Good. And I said, well, look, they can't get more than 20% of the people to log on for teaching purposes, right? They will log on for other things, you know? And so it's a rough world when you get out there online. Good. And that's why I was saying that you got to start with people and parents taking personal responsibility for the individuals in their house.
But sir, we cannot have two parallel worlds. The cyber world, the technological world, and then our world. We have to impact on that and manage that. And we cannot have a parallel set of rules. We cannot allow to happen what happened with the Zanar driver and how their culture became entrenched because people were not paying attention, they don't want to take a seat, not being vigorously pursuing it. We cannot allow it to happen to cyberbullying. Let it become so entrenched a part of the society that it becomes virtually impossible to rule out. We cannot allow it to happen like the block culture. Those are things you have to fight up front to help preserve what is wholesome about being a society so that people can grow up with a sense of values that are beneficial to themselves, their country, and to the world.
You know what?
Thank you, sir.
Let me just put one more point.
Yes, please, quickly.
You know, you talk about the culture.
No, excuse me, but I'm going to leave you both now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sir, quickly, because we have to wrap it up, because we have to go for a break. So one second, and you can...
Yeah, I've seen the culture in Barbados change when the Zetter and the drug culture came in. And it changed from, like, doing the right thing to, well, man, you got money, you got the trappings, you're the man.
Yeah.
We go back to the system where, you know, the children at the beginning, you tell them in the crossing the road, you look left and you look right.
Right.
Fundamentals.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Brastak, you're back on air, remember? 4341790, the call us for Brastak today is Thursday. Brastak, are you there? Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
Good morning, sir.
Sorry, hi. Good morning. How are you doing, man?
Wait, good afternoon. You're making me feel hungry already.
My working, even if on the road working, sometimes I don't look at my clock. It's just feel like afternoon, so it's just afternoon.
All right, sir. Good to hear you. Listen, what can we do for you today?
I'm a little bit discombobulated here, right?
Well, that's a big word. Tell me what that means.
Lost.
I think I know what it means.
Confused, right?
All right.
like trying to figure out. I went to the post office to mail some stuff out, right? Out to Barbados. I didn't even know you can't mail anything out of Barbados. You can only mail things internally.
Yeah. I thought that was happening because the planes are not flying to carry the mail.
Planes never stop flying. Flights been coming into Barbados on a daily basis, even on the lockdown.
But they have a limited scope. Commercial flights as such are not necessarily flying.
So now commercial flights open back up, right? I really want to speculate, but I would like, I don't know.
Did you get any explanation from the post office as to why?
They can only regurgitate what was said to them, right? That, you know, this stuff, you know, they're not shipping stuff internationally. The only place that we have to go now to get shipped internationally is FedEx or UPS.
Right. Right. That's right.
Right.
That's the way I mean it too.
And that is really expensive. I mean, they're not thinking about the average man at all.
But I think the reality is, we live in a real world that if commercial flights are not flying, that's where the mail used to go before, at a cheaper rate. Because if government were to seek to transport your mail by a courier, it means that it become more expensive than the regular, than the custom route. And then it means you would have to pay a higher rate. It would cost you more to transport that very same mail by the courier. So this is a fallout of the COVID situation, where most of the world is clamped down for aviation purposes.
Yeah, I understand all that part, right? But know that commercial flights open back up. You would think that there was some disorder. Wait a minute, we can get some information soon.
I think we're trying to do it gradually. I think so, but we do it gradually, step by step. Because you have to send mail, somebody has to receive it. So with the country of destination of the mail has to be receptive to your mail. So mailing is an international activity. It's not an ad hoc one person to person thing. It's governed by international rules and regulations and whatnot.
I really hope that the same way how they open up the country and put everything else in place, right? I mean, because right now it's like you feel like you're living in Cuba or some communist country where I can't send that note. Like unlimited.
We already got it on
Netflix. We already got it on the internet. We already got it that way that we can't do certain things on the internet. We can't do as in buying, you know, as in like selling stuff on the internet. We can't do that. So now what I'm saying is like I hope that somebody say we can send something out of the country soon.
I suspect the government, in the interest of the re-stimulation of the economy and for people to do their normal commercial and social functions, that is something that it will be part of the overall plan of the opening up of Barbados step by step systematically as the rest of the world opens up to Barbados also. So I think that we just need to be adaptable and endure a little more patience, and that will come working out. I think it'll work out for the better in the end. So just hang in there, and you'll see. I'm sure you'll see a gradual reopening of all these activities step by step as they become feasible and possible, because government wants the country to. We need the country to open back up to function again, so we can live as close to normal life as possible in the wake of COVID-19. All right. Thanks.
Okay. But listen. Hello.
Yes, sir.
One more thing, right?
Yeah.
One more thing before I go. I sat and I listened to the talk show all morning. And one of the things that really frustrate me, right, even from yesterday and day before, everybody calling, keeping noise about the buses, how expensive the buses are and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
The buses of the public, when the government ministers start buying big, expensive cars, nobody don't question them. So what are they questioning the buses for?
They're not
offering any kind of solutions, anything like that, right? They just call and complain. We need new buses, electric buses. Listen, we going eco and we going green, right? We going green.
But the thing is good for the environment. You don't think the people, the public, deserves to know for our ministers to come and say for Turkey that these buses are not cheap? What does that mean?
They're not cheap.
Any
electric vehicle is not cheap.
We were told. What does that mean? When does cheapness end? How cheap is
an electric car? Listen, if an electric car, right? If an electric car costs $90,000, $80,000, right?
I did not even expect that.
What did they expect of a bus? You don't have to put any sort of gasoline in it. You plugging it in and you're getting electricity from the sun.
What we are talking of, for example, of the public's right to know is the public's money that will pay for those buses. I Busy Williams' prototype was done for $900,000. What is the price of these? We deserve to know. We must know. It is all right to know because our money that will have to pay for it. I think we have to be respected and given all information, full declared of, except for matter of national security. And that certainly is not as regularly as possible. And that, you see, transparency and accountability cannot, are like, they are absolute terms. They cannot be partially transparent or like pregnancy. They can't be slightly pregnant or you're pregnant or you're not pregnant. We are either transparent and accountable and open or we are not. Otherwise, we are just making a mockery of slogans that were used to try to create an impression that this government would do better. All right, sir? Thank you very much for calling, sir. Brass Talks, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
Yeah, there's something that I would like to know. I don't think that you could give me the answer, but I'm just putting it up here. White people, when they're filing for national insurance, if you're not working, you're filing for national insurance, why you have to put your bank statement in there?
Can you say that again?
The last thing I heard on the news, people are not working all laid off or whatever, and they're filing for national insurance benefits. They have then to fill out the form to say the different things that you have to fill out and put in the form, including your bank statement.
You know, ma'am, I think that really your concern and your queries reflects a need, an overwhelming need from the part of the national insurance staff, the customer service department, to be able to make it possible for people to get such information in a digestible, understandable, and readily available as much as possible. They have to start answering their phones. They have to start returning calls. I know the present board led by Ingrid Nettel has been making some steps and doing some good work as regards people getting people to get their benefits sooner, etc. But they need at the end of it, it's people's lives that they are touching on, and they need to make an all-out drive to make the service offered in the customer service department either in person or when people go call on the phone as acceptable as top rate and as keenly done as they did when they were rising to the occasion and getting the benefits out to the persons who were adversely affected financially by COVID-19. So I share your pain, I share your frustration. It's been a perennial problem. And I hear that something will soon be done about it from what I understand. So I think we just have to make sure that happens as soon as possible and keep calling on NIS to make sure that they rise to the occasion and give the standard service that we want and deserve. All right, sir. All right, ma'am. Brass Talks, good morning. Brass Talks, good morning. Hello, Brass Talks.
Hello, hello. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for calling.
Mr. Murray.
Yes, sir.
Good. First time, I had the privilege to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
I want to say that Tuesday before last, I had a privilege to call your program. I don't know if you heard the discussion with me and myself and Peter. I was somehow explaining what Mr. Wood was talking about.
Yeah, I think I recall that, yeah.
Right. No. 20 minutes after I put down the phone, my phone rang. And he identified himself. This is a government minister.
Don't call him.
I'm not calling any name.
The only fear, constituency, not just speak very, very generally.
And I was told that because I intend to make you prove it. That was the discussion.
Right.
I want to know if this is a new normal, right? Now, let me go a little further. Well, a day or two after, and I will send you, if I get a number from you, because the WhatsApp don't hide, the WhatsApp carries the picture of the person, the sender, and everything else. And I will send you the WhatsApp that was sent to me by a government minister. right?
Yes. Okay. Okay.
And you see, let me say this to you, because it seems to be a new normal, right? That as we speak, if they don't shut up the moat in this country.
You have that on good authority? Are you sure of that?
Proper and good authority. As we speak, families, they don't shut up the boat in this country.
Right.
No, we came through a period some 12 years ago where people on this program were very vocal about what they saw happening. Is this a new step now for these other people to step up what is happening in this country?
Let me tell you what I think. First of all, I hope that those persons who we said have received threat, those families, will take it to the next level and take it to the police, report it to the police. It's nothing to be taken lightly. But what happens in the Barbadian culture is that I'm sure nobody in government would subscribe to that kind of behavior. I'm absolutely sure of it. Otherwise, I'd be living the different Barbados that I know about and the political culture in which I have been accustomed to. But there are some people who feel that they have to be more to prove. There are some party supporters who are very rabid, are very fanatical about their support. And some of them assume that this kind of extreme behavior is what you would want them to do on your behalf. Sometimes they don't discuss it with you. They just do it because they think that is what you would want that in order to please you. Or they're fanatical in their devotion to you, their commitment to you. They just think that will help your cause by taking such a desaturated and legal step against a person. So, but whatever that happens, I think people have to take steps with the law, to report to law. But most of all, I think parties have to let their supporters know in no uncertain terms that this sort of their behavior, any kind of harassment, any kind of threatening, verbal, physical, or whether financial, sexual, would not be condoned, period, especially if it is done or should be done on behalf of them and the cause to which they are supposed to subscribe. So I take your word for it.
I forgot to mention this part. In the discussion when the person called me, they said they have a copy of the tape. This is why the program is still going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the program is still in progress.
They
have a copy of the tape, and there I will be hearing from their lawyer. I'm not afraid. And if anybody thinks that they can shut up to this, oh my God, I fear thee. That is the only person that I fear.
All right.
Okay?
Sorry. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good.
Good morning. Brass Tacks, good morning. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello, Brass Tacks. Hello, Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You can hear me?
Yeah, this is Brass Tacks. Go right ahead, sir.
Hi, good morning. I got two topics to talk about. I heard this morning the discussion about the buses. My query is that sometimes it don't matter how much the cost, yes, transparency is necessary. My real question is, why are the buses carrying less capacity than before? I know they say that there are disabled buses, but for me, disabled buses are necessary, but how much people do you see catching buses that are disabled? A disabled person is not going to make his way to the bus stop. Hello?
Hi, hello.
Right, if you get me. A disabled person is not. The buses now, usually buses will go and collect disabled people from other districts. But if you're bringing 33 buses that are supposed to help the disabled and still got the capacity for normal people less, I can't see the yearly adding up would be interesting that you're bringing the buses for actually the public.
Yeah.
And that's one. And my next thing is the cyberbullying. For me, anything that is done on a public platform, as in news carrying, news outlets, stuff like that there,
I don't feel it would be called cyberbullying if the body news are extract from a thing, because I remember the time with the news when a certain reporter was coughing. That extract was news also, but it was ha-ha funny. I feel sometimes we take things out of context. And we made the only thing that was wrong with that is that we are people that are now social media. We are in social media times. Let me put it that way. That, yes, the young boy, I watched the whole clip.
And you felt it was a fair reaction to what transpired?
Not a fear. Let me say my point first. It was the comments that really get people. But for me, I watched the whole clip. And there's other parts in there that I could have picked. I picked out that was funny. I didn't mean that you was this, you know, dissing the children or trying to bring down the morale. But it was not right for the comments. But, of course, we live. We will see other clips from other countries, and we will laugh and comment about it. This morning, I saw a clip with a big belly fat child trying to fit through a space between a gate and a building. But because it is Barbados, you know how sometimes thing is. But the thing about the mother saying suicide now, I mean, we need to grow our children that they will face anything in life.
But sir, why do people think it's necessary to take up on these things and try to derail, laugh at, decry, vilify, make mock sport at people? Why do they have to do it? If something is, just let it go. Why do they have to pick up on these things and target persons? Do they have some flaw in their personality, in the psyche of Barbarians, that they might see to drag people into disrepute from time to time? It's not necessary.
One time I made a comment on Instagram. I was selling something and I spelled a word wrong. And before the people look at the article that I was selling, the focus on the word. Because people like to ha-ha, they like to laugh. But I mean, we need to grow our children or ourselves that we don't let these things bother me, because some people look at failure more than success. For you to be, you can walk down the road and you stamp your toe, people will laugh at you. They won't come and say, well, you're all right or stuff like that. This is the society we live in. Next thing, the format that it was done on, as in the different media heads that did it. Our children should not be subjected to these sort of things. These are things for adults. For the parent to be saying that the child saw the thing, I know that children, but children should be children. They should not be exposed to those sort of formats neither. We need to start protecting our children and teaching our children to be strong. Yes, we need to let our children know what is going on outside, but that necessarily means we can let our children watch porn to learn about sex. If you get me.
Daniel. But sir,
you understand? But you need to protect this society. We need to grow our children to be strong. It is not right, but it's the comments that really get people, because some people are really ignorant. If a professor that come and say, well, the little boy should have spoken properly, it would be under a different heading. But when you're dealing with ignorant people, they will kind of say, when he speak well, he come out, he come on my interest, and know what he said. Because sometimes we do it as big people. Years ago, I had talks like, I know when I get my hair did. That was a talk. That was a natural speak for people. Where you going, man? I know come from again. Where you know come from? I know come from again. My hair did. And it was a ha-ha laugh. We got to not be so sensitive. I understand how the little boys, but we need to grow our children to be strong, because when you go in the real world, you get called all sorts of names. People's names used to be Butterball. If you get what I mean, we in a society where it's a different thing, but we need to empower our minds.
I get what you mean, sir, but that doesn't give me the right. That doesn't mean that we should glorify these things when they happen. We should stamp them out. It is not behavior that needs to be encouraged or promoted or accepted. Wherever it is negative impact on people, and some children are scarred emotionally for life from some of these things. Might look funny to adults, but so you have to see how it impacts on another person. How not everybody is able to withstand and defend themselves psychologically, verbally against some of these things. So therefore, it can have an adverse effect on people, their families, and something, like I said, can last them for the rest of their life and turn them into citizens that we then think that are antisocial and are indulgent in illegal activities, and therefore has a negative impact on the society. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Yeah, anything more you want to add to that? Or?
No, please. Just thank you for letting me.
Thank you, but I don't quite understand with this where we have to teach all children the raffle. Sure, you raise your children in a particular way to deal with the world, but it doesn't mean that because the world is rough up there, that they have to, that people should be expected to make it rough, maintain that roughness, or make it even rougher. Thanks for calling, sir. This is Bastak. Morning, Bastak. Hello, Bastak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Glenn?
I'm pretty good. Had a rough patch technologically, but I'm hoping to get over that.
Well, thanks and praise. Now, the guy who spoke about the buses and carrying less passengers because of the disabled person, and the guest will not be on a bus, but people go to pick. One must recognize that a disabled person with a wheelchair may have a son, daughter, ward, or whoever it is, the knowledge of the fact that the buses now are available to take you with a wheelchair to your destination, whatever that destination may be. They take you to the bus stop, reveal you to the bus stop. Now, before, if you want to go to town, you live in St. Philip, you might have to pay $100 by a taxi to get into town. Now, your ward could take you to the bus stop. You get there, the bus kneels, some put you on the bus, travel with you, take you off, and put you back on, as the case may be. So to say that it's carrying less is a non-point, because more and more barbarians do not accept change. We are people who are steeped in this whole question of when you change, you're doing it for worse, not for better. And there are several persons in Barbados that are disabled. I am a member of the Wheelchair Foundation. Indeed, I'm the PR of the Wheelchair Foundation. And in 15 years, we have given away in excess of 1,600 wheelchairs. 1,600 wheelchairs. And that has nothing to do with the disabled community. So therefore, if they're giving away another 200 or 300 or 500, you will understand the amount of persons in Barbados with disabilities as it relates to mobility. And therefore, we should be very happy in Barbados to have these kneeling buses in our country. You know, people only get the message when it hits them home. And I think for more and more, people have to realize that you never know what will befall you in this life. And therefore, I think that is a very good step and a step in the right direction to grant, instead of getting upward mobility with the wheelchair, now you have the upward mobility with the buses. If you've got somebody else, just wheel them to the bus stop, go with them, put them on the bus, get them off, and carry them to go to a store in Bridgetown. That's where they have wheelchair access to these places. But more people cannot afford to pay a taxi to come to take them to the Bridgetown or any other commercial center.
Sir, let me first of all commend your organization for obviously what is some stunning work done, and I think you should publicize your existence some more, and so you can get more support to do even greater work. But I think what the caller, like many people, was reflecting is that we need, if you had a proper exposition and explanation and prior information about the buses out there, you don't have to wait until they're on the road to explain them. We should have a priority where people are educated publicly as the bus of their features, how they should be treated, how they operate, what the expectations are on behalf of the public, what the expectations are on behalf of the operators. So this whole issue has been shrouded in a necessary lack of information, so to speak. It's not just the announce that they're rare. I think the whole history of them, so that people ask questions, and out of questions comes suspicion, it comes rumors, it comes speculation, and then issues that become mushroom which they necessarily might not even. If the whole question of how do you, whenever there's a major activity or any activity, you should have a studied plan of how you're going to PR before, during, and after. How you're going to message it, how you're going to inform the public, because in the finding assets is for the betterment of the public. The public needs to know, especially where their taxpayers' money is concerned.
agree with you on this occasion. We think that the before those buses are rolled out on the road, that some PR program should be put in place so that people can understand the reason for bringing those buses to Barbados and how they will operate. I know sometime before I have heard one or two disabled persons, differently able persons, talking about the buses and the noise that maybe they get there because a blind person would not know sometimes what's happening and or somebody who's differently able. So once they get that amount of proper PR program, I think that those buses will do a good job and the people get to know what's happening. Now, talking about PR programs, I heard a lady not too long ago saying that you must put your bank statement for national insurance. That is not true. The national insurance is ad nauseum. I heard on the radio time in and time out again that if you want your check sent to your bank, all you got to do is to cut off the top part of your statement. They don't want to know what money you got on your bank. They just want to know that you have the name of the bank and your account number so they can make sure that the money goes to your account and nobody else's account. Even though you might write it, they would still like to see authentication. And even if you don't have the bank statement, you can go into the bank and the bank will stamp your the form that you have to fill out so that you will know that it's authenticated, that the money will go to your account. I think more and more what is happening is that the national insurance is trying its best to direct use the technology to get your money through faster. For example, the pension checks don't come out in four rather than send it to every month. So and that goes direct to your account as long as you sign up. And you don't have to send no bank statement. It's only top of the bank statement just to identify who you are, your address, and whatever is on your bank savings number, whatever kind of number you have in the bank, so that the money will go to your account. Those are the things that one has. See, what happens in Barbados is that we do not listen. We hear, but they don't listen. And listening is a part of communication. We don't listen, we hear. And more we have to listen. God give you two ears to listen and to hear, but if you don't listen, you will never know what the final thing is in terms of how it comes across. So let us listen more and talk a little less sometimes. Have a blessed day, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling. Brastoff, good morning. You on the air? Good morning.
Behold, good and joyful.
Hello? Good morning. Morning, Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Go right ahead, sir.
Good. Let me commend you. I know a little bit about your journalistic prowess, and I want to commend you now as your capability as a moderator.
Thank you, sir.
Contributions to Brass Tacks, you know. You used to be involved in the cultural activities many years ago, huh?
Yeah.
Years ago.
Right.
You were a cultural ambassador. I remember you.
My proudest involvement in culture is really when the 2000 Celebrity Monarch Calypso King Trophy in 2000. And I was using the name then as Hard Dumplings. That was my stage name.
Oh, which
my proudest moment in culture.
You were in a tent at that time, huh?
Yeah, I was in the celebrity tent, yeah.
With celebrities, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I go way back. Before that, but your involvement, you used to be involved in the St. Thomas Calypso Festival, remember that?
Yeah, I remember organizing the St. Thomas Festival.
Yeah, 1981,
yeah.
Huh?
A little later than
that,
I think.
81, 82, yeah.
Involving all of St. Thomas. I mean, every village in St. Thomas had an activity over a week or so.
Exactly. I remember that very well because it was involved in one that you had in Bagatelle.
Right. That's where the prize giving took place.
Right.
I
came third in the competition there, man, and the Honorable Tom Adams presented me with a prize.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You remember passing the prizes to him.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So I want to thank you for your involvement then, and that was one of the things that spiraled me into getting involved in Calypso.
Yeah.
You know, through the years. I then started doing my Calypso thing back in 1984 then on the
Indian Neville. Would you like to tell us what your Calypso name is?
My name is Georgie.
Georgie, right.
Yeah, right.
I know you. So, I followed you pretty closely over the years, too.
Yeah, right. So I look at the Calypso over the years and I mean, examining it. This year, we have the official word from the NCF that the festival would be off. This is the first time the festival wouldn't be happening since its inception, actually. And we see that a lot of the Calypsonians have actually signed off on the deathbed of the festival also, because we're not hearing any significant contributions and songs from the big bards, you know, the big boys of the Calypso. And I wonder why, because the Attorney General, they have opened up the gates a little bit for crowds to be able to attend certain things. And we're not hearing anything from the festival, although they really, you know, drive a nail into the deathbed of the crop over. And I believe that something should be done to engage some of the people who are interested in the festival, because there's still a cadre of persons, Barbadians, even though we have a lot of people who come from overseas, there's still a cadre of Barbadians who have an interest in crop over. And though it's not official, I think we should still look at organizing something for the Calypsonians, for the masses as well. A lot of talk has been made about virtual shows. I'm hearing a lot of fellows talking about these things, but I'm not seeing anything significant. I don't know how they're going to monetize this whole thing, how they can get people involved in these virtual shows. But I think that the time has come right now, and this is the month when crop over will be really steering, you know, bouncing, hopping. A lot of people will be on island. A lot of fets going on. A lot of tents will be going on. We will be into maybe the semi-final stage at this time, getting ready for the finals. And we are seeing nothing that can give us a little boost to segue us into next year, for instance. And I am just a little concerned that we're not hearing anything from the big boys of Calypso who can bring something to the fore, who can at least come through with some sounds. I'm not hearing a very lot of sounds from Calypsonians either, you know, on radio programming that can give the people the impetus to get out there and get involved in something like a mini festival. I'm not hearing anything from the districts. I'm not hearing anything from the community. Where are the band leaders? Where are the Calypso tent lovers? The managers? What can be done in this last probably 3-4 weeks to put some sort of relationship into our minds that can, you know, lead us on into November and on into 2021 for a festival? We're lacking that momentum. And I would want to hear what your thoughts are, how people can lift this thing. Even though it's signed off as being off, if something can't be done right to engineer in people's minds that we can have a festival of something.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Hello? Yes, sir. Hello? Yeah, caller. Yes,
I'm here.
Yeah, okay. First of all, I understand your call for something that will involve more people and display a greater percentage of the products and works of the artists. But don't we live in a real world? Are you concerned that when you say to have events that are from mass crowds, that you're therefore exposing persons to the greater danger and greater possibility of contracting or spreading coronavirus than when you do that? The gradual limit and the limitations imposed on events so far in terms of the number of crowds, the size of the crowds and whatnot. I don't think that we cannot allow the feeling of or the wish for bacchanalia and having a good time and walking up to dulling our senses, especially when you add alcohol to it, that people lose their sense of proportions, drop their sense of caution and propriety and behavior within the law, you know, let go of the inhibition and therefore indulge in behavior that would not be only a danger to themselves, their family, but to the society by giving a further resurgence to coronavirus. So I think the government has been doing it gradually. You would see, you know, some people are even questioning this reopening of the borders, so to speak, by opening the country to more commercial flights. People are questioning whether we should be doing it yet or so quickly or in this way because of the danger of coronavirus. I believe you follow the news. You can see what's happening all over the world, especially in the United States and other countries where people have opened up too soon and too quickly, and now there's a rebound there and they have to clamp back down. We in Barbados cannot afford it either in financial terms or in human life.
And therefore, I think that we have to do it step by step. Barbados is here. There was a Barbados before there was crop over. I mean, there was crop over then. There was a cessation for a long time. Then it was revived in 1974. Barbados is still a viable society. We will be a viable society this year and others for crop over. But let us therefore do it in the long term interest of the country. As regards I understand what is being attempted, not only in Barbados, but among the artistic community around the world, where virtual shows are concerned. But my only problem is, how do you make money on it? I mean, you expose your talent, but people are saying they can't attend the function. How do you get back make any money back on your expenses in creating a product, an event, a show, a virtual show? How do you finance it? How do you reward? How do you get money? How do you get income to live? So I think there's a limitation to that. And those people who I think are saying that they will get exposure, and somebody may pick up their time, they have to be very careful to how they do that, because of intellectual property theft and whatnot, borrowing of ideas, stealing of ideas, and they have to be very concerned about protecting their livelihood or their possible livelihood and their intellectual rights. But on the other hand, where the calypso are concerned, I am still not hearing any calypsos of with any stories, any wit, any humor, any satire. I'm just hearing a lot of what over the last few years it was started called samey type calypsos, and it does not do credit to our boast, our frequent boast of how much talent we have, how good and how what a high degree that talent is. I think the limitations of the output, I'm not sure if it is that the better talents are not putting their trunks out because they think there's no market for it.